Mayreed opened fire, screaming. Her other pilots drew their own pistols. Bullets peppered the scorpion. It kept running, claws tearing up dirt and dead dinosaurs. The shots ricocheted off the scorpion's exoskeleton, doing it no harm. The scorpion raised its stinger and shot a jet of venom. A pilot screamed and fell, clutching at his face, his skin melting. Mayreed turned and ran. The scorpion leaped among the pilots, clawing, tearing them apart. Their bullets slammed into it again and again, doing nothing. Mayreed leaped into her Firebird and kick-started the engines.
"Hey, asshole!" she shouted over her shoulder at the scorpion. "I'm going to bomb you from the air!"
She was out of missiles. She was out of bombs. Luckily, the scorpion didn't know that. The beast left the pilots and bounded across the valley toward her. The scorpion leaped toward the starfighter, pincers opening wide. Mayreed switched on the afterburner. Searing streams of white-hot inferno blazed over the creature. She kept the starfighter on the ground, engines blazing, the fire washing across the alien. The exoskeleton melted. The soft flesh inside boiled. By the time Mayreed powered down, there was nothing left of the scorpion but shards of shell and ashes. Mayreed stepped out of her Firebird and spat onto the smoldering remains.
"Arsehole," she said.
The colonists finally emerged from their silo. There were only about 30, Mayreed saw, and her heart sank. The message had said there were 50. The colonists approached the surviving pilots, embraced them, and some even fell to their knees and wept.
"Thank you," they said, tears falling. "Thank you, heirs of Earth."
Mayreed looked around her. She had thought this planet beautiful from above. Now she saw desolation. Crashed starfighters, the bodies of friends. Plumes of smoke rose and the stench of death filled her nostrils. Mayreed lowered her head. "Earth is real," she thought. "It must be real, because I cannot believe in a galaxy where all planets are places of despair. I must believe that we have a good home, that we will someday return." She pulled out her comm and hailed the fleet. Soon, a transport vessel glided down to the valley and the refugees climbed in. The shuttle rose, flanked by starfighters, taking the refugees up to the main inheritor fleet. But Mayreed stayed on the planet. The shuttle had brought her a replacement cockpit canopy. She would need a few hours to work, to repair her ship. To her surprise, Ramses remained planetside with her.
"Don't you have any girls to woo up in the fleet?"
Mayreed said. She stood on a ladder, leaning over her cockpit, working with a wrench.
"Undoubtedly," he said. "But somebody needs to guard your ass down here while you work."
She leaned into the cockpit, reaching for a screw.
"Ah, well, keep your eyes off my arse while I work."
"Please,"
Ramsey said.
"There are much more pleasant things to look at down here. Rotting dinosaur corpses, for one."
She turned from the cockpit to flip him the bird. Ramses opened his pack. He pulled out a silver, filigreed dala with a long spout.
"Firebug, take a coffee break with me,"
he said.
"I'm brewing a batch of the finest Egyptian beans seasoned with cardamom, the drink of the gods."
She scoffed.
"Coffee is for sisses. I drink scotch."
"Mayreed,"
he said, voice softer now.
"Join me."
She gazed into his eyes, silent for a moment. She put down her wrench, climbed off the ladder, and sat beside him. He brewed the coffee, which he served in small porcelain cups. The drink was very dark, thick, and bitter. And, Mayreed had to admit, it was heavenly. As they sipped, the corpses lay around them, smoldering, and ash rained from the sky. For a long time they drank in silence.
"Mayreed,"
Ramses finally said.
"Are you all right?"
Mayreed cursed the damn tears that flowed down her cheeks.
"No,"
she whispered. Ramses put down his cup. Mayreed tossed her own aside and embraced him, clinging to him desperately, crushing him in her arms. Her tears flowed. Ramses wrapped his arms around her and stroked her long red hair.
"None of this is right,"
he said softly.
"I know, but we have to believe. That Earth is out there. That we'll see her again. That we'll bring everyone home.
Mayreed sniffed.
I believe Earth is real. We'll find her someday. We'll fly there together through blue skies over green hills. We'll see all the places from the legends, the rolling oceans, the soaring mountains, the highlands of Scotland.
The golden desert of Egypt,
Ramsay said,
and the glory of the pyramids.
Home, Mayreed whispered.
That's why we fight, isn't it? For home.
For home,
he agreed.
Now let me help you with your cockpit. You're a damn fine pilot, Firebug, but a horrible mechanic.
Normally she would have punched him. Today she laughed. They fixed her cockpit. They soared back into space, flying their Firebirds. They rejoined the Heirs of Earth, humanity's only fleet. A group of 20 warships, a handful of starfighters, a few cargo hulls. That was it. A humble fleet, far from home. The last remnants of humanity's ancient glory. A group of refugees, their homeworld lost in shadows. With bursts of light, the starships ignited their warp drives. They blasted into the distance, seeking a mythical star and a lost home.
Interview for the End of the World by Rhett C. Bruno. 142 hours until impact. Come in, I said. My office door creaked open. A security guard ushered in the Titan Project's next candidate. I quickly downed the remnants of a glass of lukewarm whiskey in my liver-spotted hand to calm my mind, then placed it down behind my computer screen. The guard and I exchanged a nod, and he bowed out of the room, leaving myself and the candidate alone. He didn't make it more than a step before he stopped to stare out of my window at the tremendous spaceship docked in the center of my compound. It was at the pinnacle of my illustrious technical career, which had left me one of the richest men on Earth. At least until around 2 years ago, when a massive asteroid was discovered hurtling toward Earth with no intention of stopping, and money became as useless as the paper it was printed on. People had given it a number of creative nicknames like the Devil's Fist or Ragnar Rock, but in my opinion there was no reason to call it anything different than what it was. The end of Earth as we knew it. Congratulations on making it this far, mister. I hesitated at his name. I'd conducted thousands of interviews by then and was beginning to lose count. I glanced at the resume open on my computer. He was Frank Drayton, 27 years old and already a world-renowned horticulturalist. Not the most exciting job, but a necessary addition for a colony on a hostile world. He was marked for likely acceptance, but nobody got a spot in the Titan Project without me looking them in the eyes first. Drayton, I finished. He blinked as if waking from a dream and hurried over to my desk. Director Darian Trask, you can't even begin to understand how much of an honor it is to meet you. He extended a trembling hand. I shook it without standing. It was as clammy as a teenage boy's on a first date, so I quickly let go. I said, I'd prefer we'd never have to meet at all, Mr. Drayton. His lips twisted and his gaze turned downward. Relax, I said. I only wish the world's circumstances were different. I gestured toward the hard plastic chair set on the other side of my desk. Please, sit. He released a string of low, panicked laughs as he sat. His index finger immediately started tapping on the arm of the chair. I took that moment to study him. Heavy beads of sweat rolled down his forehead, and he was in desperate need of a shave. The loose-fitting suit he wore was desperate for a decent tailor, not that I could judge him for that. There were probably none left open on Earth to visit. His disheveled appearance didn't surprise me. It was the same situation with almost every candidate who entered my office. After all, it's not every day a human being has to interview for a chance to escape the end of the world. Now, I began, there's very little time left, so let's try to keep this as brief as possible. In this room, your accomplishments are no longer in question. Extraordinary as they may be, they are no more impressive than the thousands of others who have stepped through that door. You're here, Mr. Drayton, so that I can find out who you are.
I...
He swallowed and took another deep breath. His fingers stopped tapping and he looked me in the eyes for the first time.
I understand.
Good.
I presume my assistant, Kara, already briefed you on the project and showed you around the compound?
She did.
He looked through the window.
I didn't realize how big the ship was until I got here, though.
Not big enough, I lamented.
This time I joined him in staring at the colossal ship propped on the opposite side of my half-mile-wide compound, away from all the buildings. It tapered like a sideways skyscraper wrapped in bowed metal plates. A carefully selected workforce installed the final layers of radiation shielding for its imminent departure, when the only plasmatic pulse drives ever to be used non-experimentally would allow it to reach Saturn in 2 years. Mr. Drayton was awestruck, but the view made me want to crawl inside a bottle. My gaze first wandered to the pale mark in the blue sky. The asteroid, growing closer every day to becoming a meteorite. Then I looked to the horde of people camped in the desert outside of the compound's 20-foot concrete wall, hoping to earn a spot on board. Armed drones and several dozen security officers kept the desperate mass at bay. Mr. Drayton turned back to me.
How many can it hold?
Excuse me?
The ship. How many people can it hold?
3,000, I said. 406 spots have already been filled by my remaining staff. Individual accomplishments aside, I assure you that they had to meet the same stringent criteria as candidates such as yourself. They're all that remains of Trass Industries. It felt wrong to ask anyone to help me construct the Titan project without guaranteeing them a spot on it. The conditions for selection were simple, at least in that they eliminated more than 99% of humanity. Other than having to bear an appreciable level of expertise in a field that would benefit the new world, the simplest requirement was that every candidate had to be between 18 and 35 years old. They also had to be in optimal physical health and clear of all chronic diseases. Kara administered the physicals, and nobody who failed ever made it through my door. Those who remained untethered by marriage were preferred, since their significant others would have to meet the same conditions. Lastly, anyone with young children was eliminated. There were fears on my research team that an underdeveloped body would be ravaged by the trip through zero-G. I also wasn't keen on taking anybody willing to leave their offspring to die alone.
3,000,
Mr. Drayton muttered after a lengthy silence.
Yes,
I said.
No more, no less.
Every traveler will be kept in a state-of-the-art hibernation chamber for the duration of the 2-year journey. The low-activity state will allow us to conserve the limited resources we're able to bring until we can establish an operating colony on Titan. It's my job to whittle the list of more than 1 million suitable candidates to that minuscule number. Sneak in one extra, and I might as well invite the mob camped outside of my compound. He glanced nervously back out of the window.
Are those really all candidates?
He asked.
Everyone I passed out there claims to have met with you.
Not all of them. You can thank whichever rejected candidate decided to break our non-disclosure agreement and leak what was going on here for that. I had to promise 50 spots on board to some of the finest soldiers in the world in order to keep the project safe. We're lucky we're in the middle of the Arizona desert, otherwise I'd need even more.
It wasn't easy getting out here with all of the airlines shut down, that's for sure. It took me a day just to find a gas station that wasn't abandoned or torn apart.
Yes, I suppose I was crazy for thinking I could keep the Titan project safe from the widespread doomsday hysteria. Ever since the leak, I couldn't even leave the Trass Industries compound without being hounded or having my life threatened. Rich, poor, it didn't matter. People had begun to realize that the united efforts of governments around the world to divert the asteroid were futile, and that the only way to ensure survival was to leave Earth behind. There were other corporations developing space stations that would orbit our home world, or attempting to establish colonies on the moon. But with so many people being crammed onto them, an unpredictable percentage would likely suffocate before their populations leveled out to suit their life support systems. The safety of my compound was indebted to a majority of Earth choosing to camp outside of those projects, rather than crave a trip to an uninhabitable moon millions of miles away. I sighed. It doesn't matter anymore. In a week, the asteroid will hit, and we'll be on our way to the freezing plains of Titan. Why not Mars, or Europa, or anywhere else closer? Your message didn't say. As you well know, there is no second Earth in our solar system, Mr. Drayton. I chose based on potential. There is a wealth of resources and fuel on both Titan and Saturn which will make generating enough energy to stay warm relatively simple, once we're able to repurpose the ship into a settlement. The thick atmosphere also removes the issue of radiation from the list of concerns. We'll need all the help we can get. Establishing renewable sources of food on any world not meant for life will take time. For the first time since our meeting, Mr. Drayton's eyes glinted with the confidence of a man who had risen to the top of his field. I think I can help with that, he boasted. I've met with three other candidates who claimed the same, I countered. I held up my finger before he could offer another predictable response. He slouched into the chair and allowed me to continue. As I indicated earlier, your accomplishments are no longer in question. It was only your highly scrutinized thesis on vertical farming at Cornell that encouraged me to reach out to you as a candidate. I appreciate boldness. I can design all of the spaceships and facilities I want to, but without food, they'll be little more than oversized metal tombs. Mr. Drayton sat up. You read that? I don't take this task lightly, Mr. Drayton. I'm always thorough with my research. Of course you are. He leaned forward and wrapped his hands around the rounded edge of my desk. I've read all of your work, he said. Your 2021 paper about how you pioneered your zero-emissions automated vehicular network to reduce traffic and eliminate accidents in Detroit was, well, it was life-changing. I raised an eyebrow. Life-changing? That's new. Though it all seems rather trivial compared to what we're working on here, doesn't it? All of the color drained from Mr. Drayton's cheeks. I could see his lips twitching ever so slightly as his brain struggled to come up with a response that wouldn't make him seem more foolish. I appreciate the compliment, I intervened. I folded my hands on my lap and established direct eye contact with him. Okay, as long as I've answered all of your questions, I'm going to ask you a few of my own. I want you to be as honest as possible. He nodded. His finger started to tap the arm of his chair again, but he held my gaze. Okay, I said. Your information states that you are not married and don't have any children. Do you currently have any manner of significant other? Mr. Drayton shifted in his seat. Not in the years since the asteroid was discovered, he said, clearly perturbed. Divorced. Ah. I have had plenty of those walk through these doors, eager to get away. It'll get easier with time. He exhaled. I hope. I turned to my screen for a moment, trying to make it look like I was reading something so I didn't rush things. After countless interviews, it was difficult for them not to feel rehearsed. So, where were you when you heard about the asteroid? I asked. He continued looking in my direction, though his stare grew unfocused. I could read the struggle all over his face. Mr. Drayton, I said. Sorry. He shook his head and reestablished eye contact. I was with my ex-wife. I suppose you could say we didn't agree over why the asteroid is going to hit Earth.
She turned her complete attention to our church and trying to repent for her sins so God might reconsider his judgment. It was like she completely forgot about her. He paused. It took him a few seconds to gather himself so that he could continue. Anyway, I tried to go along with it while I could, but eventually I decided that I'd rather take a chance at living. We all responded differently. I remained indifferent on the whys. The only thing in the world that mattered to me after I found out that a rogue asteroid around the size of a small moon had somehow been rerouted toward Earth was getting humanity's best and brightest off it. A branch of Trass Industries had been focused on commodifying space travel at the time, so it seemed like a logical transition. My next real challenge, after effectively eliminating car accidents throughout the United States. I am glad you didn't hesitate, Mr. Drayton said. You were the only one smart enough to consider running far away from this place before wasting time on anything else. The value of a clean slate is lost on many of my peers. He was handling himself well enough, so I decided it was time to find out what I really wanted to know. I stared at my computer for a few seconds, again, so I didn't seem impatient, and then asked, "Why should I choose you to join this venture to our new world?" Mr. Drayton leaned back and took a deep breath. "Because I've dedicated my life to understanding living things, sir," he said. "We'll need much of the life we take for granted here to blossom if we ever hope to make Titan feel like a new home." I used my hand to mask a slight grin. There was no doubt he'd practiced that answer in a mirror plenty of times, but I could tell by his eyes that he meant it. It was one of my more favorite responses yet. Most candidates couldn't help but list their achievements or mention their will to survive. "Well said," I admitted. "I think I've heard everything I need to. Thank you, Mr. Drayton." The interview was briefer than usual, but after administering thousands, I could size people up quickly. "Please proceed to the waiting area. I will personally inform you of my decision as soon as possible. If you are accepted, you'll be escorted to the safety of an on-site dormitory, where you will remain until the Titan Project departs at exactly 8 a.m. on September 30th, 2031, 6 days from now. If you aren't, well, then, Mr. Drayton, I hope you're able to find peace in whatever way suits you." I stood and extended my hand. He immediately sprung to his feet, almost slipping, and grabbed it. "Thank you, sir," he said twice as he shook it vehemently. "Well, at least either way, I'll have accomplished my dream of meeting you." I released his hand and allowed myself to visibly crack a businesslike smile. "Good day, Mr. Drayton." He backed away, slowly, his eyes darting between myself and the Titan Project out the window. Then the door opened, and one of my security officers came through. He placed his hand on Mr. Drayton's shoulder and escorted him out of the office. As soon as he was gone, I slumped back into my chair and exhaled. Even the good interviews took a lot out of me. I closed his information on my computer, and the screen reverted to my list of candidates. I had to strain my eyes to keep all the text from looking like one big blob. Like Mr. Drayton, I'd selected every single one of those people. There were doctors, theoreticians, physicists, engineers, artists, self-made billionaires, and anything else you could imagine from every country around the globe. I scrolled down the list. As many as there were, I could remember the face of everyone I'd talked to, accepted or rejected. I always did it, personally, though with a cohort of armed guards for rejections. There was no telling what desperate people would do. Only 400 interviews remained as I checked off Mr. Drayton. 5 of those were experts in the same field as Mr. Drayton who were coming in later that day, so I couldn't be sure if he made the cut yet or not. But I had a good feeling about him. 93 more were all I could take. With barely a week left until the doomsday clock struck zero, I knew I was cutting it close. But I had to be meticulous. I owed them all that much, at least.
Before I could scroll down to the next candidate on my list, an email popped in the bottom right corner of my screen. I didn't recognize the sender, but the subject read, "Take my son and you won't regret it." I forwarded it to my junk folder, where thousands of similar emails remained in purgatory. "If only I could," I whispered. I reached under my desk to grab a half-empty bottle of whiskey and refill the glass sitting by my keyboard. It was the only thing I could do to quiet the voices of everyone I was planning to reject from bouncing around in my head. I was inches away from having a much-needed sip when my door swung open. My assistant, Kara, froze in the entrance. Her expression soured when she noticed the glass in my hands. She'd been with me since her parents died in a car accident and left her an orphan at only 10 years old. My company was working on implementing the automated vehicle network at the time, so I legally adopted her. At first it was simply a publicity stunt, and then I wound up loving her as much as any father should. I always found myself shocked when I realized what a beautiful, intelligent young woman she'd grown into. She had the brains to take over Trass Industries from me one day, and if not for the asteroid, I'm sure she would have. "I thought I told you to knock," I grumbled. I didn't mean to take such a harsh tone with her, but the whiskey's pungent aroma was wafting around my nostrils, and all I wanted was a drink. Unable to take her eyes off my glass, she said, "I did. 3 times. I was glad she didn't comment on it for once. I had too much on my mind without worrying about disappointing her again. "Oh, is everything all right?"
"Fine. I just wanted to let you know that your next appointment is almost ready. She just passed her physical."
"You could have buzzed me." I noticed her eyes drift away from the glass in my hand and scan the entirety of my messy office. "Checking up on me again?"
"It's almost 5.
She took a few long strides into my office and picked up a pile of loose papers.
"You need to eat, Dad."
"I'll find time for that eventually," I said. She bit her lip, but decided to move on.
"How did Mr. Drayton do?"
she asked. "You know I can't tell you yet." I never allowed her or anyone else to be involved in my decisions. Truthfully, I didn't even want her to have the burden of knowing their names, but I couldn't run both the interviews and the physicals all by myself. She stopped cleaning and looked at me.
"I can help you, if you'll let me," she said. "I've met thousands of candidates. I know what you're looking for."
I shook my head. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see someone in the desperate crowd beyond the fence of my compound, standing on the back of a truck and flashing a sign large enough for me to read. "Let me in." "No," I said. "It's my responsibility and mine alone."
"It doesn't have to be. You're not Noah, you know. There are hundreds of us who've been here with you every step of the way."
"Don't make the mistake of thinking this is anything like some fable, Kara," I scolded. "His task was easy. The animals he marched 2 by 2 couldn't speak to him. They couldn't beg or offer their billions for a spot. They couldn't send in pictures of their children who now have less than 7 days to live." I slapped the glass off my desk. Kara yelped when it shattered on the floor. I went still. For a moment, neither of us made a sound. Layer upon layer of silence folded over each other until the tension in the air had my neck itching. "I'm sorry," I said. I bent over from my chair and started picking up the pieces until I felt her slender hand fall upon my shoulder. Immediately, my racing heart began to slow. She had a way of calming me, which I'll never understand.
"I didn't mean to upset you," she said.
"It's not you."
"I just want to help as much as I can."
I patted her hand. "You are more than you'll ever know." I stared into her bright green eyes. "It's not because I don't trust you, Kara."
"I know."
"Every person I say yes to just means there's another one who won't be coming.
I can run across the solar system to Titan, but I'll have to remember everyone who sat across from me and didn't make the cut. I'll hear their voices and see their faces every time I close my eyes. You don't deserve to have that on your conscience.
By the end of my venting, Kara was sitting beside me on my desk, the brow of her freckled face furrowed.
And you do?
Better me alone than all of us. I forced a smile.
Now, I think I'll take you up on that dinner offer.
Why don't you pick something up for us from the cafe? We can eat after my next appointment. I'd been sick of the food in my compound for months, but since we were in the middle of the Arizona desert and I couldn't leave, options were limited.
I'm on it.
She started toward the exit, then stopped and glanced back at the wet spot on the floor.
Would you like me to pick you out another bottle?
She asked. I didn't have to work hard to smile after hearing that.
Make it two, I said. It will be a long week. Don't push it. I'll have security send the next candidate in on my way down.
Thank you, Kara. The door shut behind her, and I got to my feet and stretched my old legs. I spent so much time in my chair that sometimes I wondered if I'd passed the physical necessary to make it onto the Titan project. I stepped over the spill and opened a cabinet where I kept more glasses. I grabbed one and held it up to the light. The bottom was a little dusty, but it was clean enough. I carried it back to my desk and filled it until the whiskey bottle was empty. There were three knocks at my door as I sat back down, along with another email on my computer, begging me to take somebody. I closed my eyes and took as long of a sip as I could handle. When I was done, I wiped my mouth and pulled up the next candidate's information. Jillian Stark was a nuclear physicist who worked directly beside a Nobel Prize winner, back when that was a thing people cared about.
Come in, I said.
24 hours until impact. A single day remained before the asteroid would hit Earth, and the Titan project still wasn't off the ground. The finishing touches to the ship took longer than expected, and candidates were finally beginning to be loaded into their pods. I stood on one of the highest decks of the tremendous vessel. The inside was little more than a ring-shaped corridor, wrapped by glassy sleep chambers, with a lift in the center. Every habitable level except for the command deck was identical. The highest deck was the only place I could go, where I couldn't hear the echoes of gunshots and screaming. As the orange mark in the sky grew, the mob outside of my compound's walls intensified. I had to divert every member of security I had to keep them at bay. I ran my fingers along an empty sleep chamber as I strolled by. Exhaustion had them trembling. For the previous week, sleep had proven difficult no matter how much I drank. I found myself up every night, watching the few remaining news feeds as they talked about the chaos rampant throughout the planet. From America to China and everywhere in between, the entire world was tearing itself apart. Just one night earlier, there were reports that a Russian space station scheduled for launch into Earth's orbit had been ripped to pieces by a mob. Now just such a mob stood outside my compound, seeking to do the same.
It's going to work, Dad, Kara said behind me, her voice echoing throughout the wide, vacant hall.
I quickly reeled in my hand and turned to her. Dirt covered her face and clothes, but my eyes shot to the drops of dried blood on her right cheek. I saw no wound, which meant the blood probably wasn't hers.
It's not the journey I'm worried about, I said.
How is it out there?
Not as bad as I look, she said, smiling. We're holding. Security is sticking to your orders for now, just warning shots.
So you came here to check up on me again, did you?
Her lips pursed and she looked to the floor.
No, there's been a complication with one of the candidates. He smuggled. Well, you'd better come see for yourself.
I surveyed the empty level and its life-saving compartments one last time and nodded. I stepped toward the central lift, but Kara placed a hand on my chest with enough force to stop me. Her features darkened.
Is everything okay? She questioned.
I didn't need to see my reflection to know I looked terrible, every bit my age. My eyelids felt like they had stones tied to the bottom of them. I managed a smile and said, "I'll be fine, Kara. Nothing a few drinks can't handle." I ignored her disapproving scowl as I brushed her hand away and continued on my way. The lift carried us to the lowest deck, where the ship's exit ramp awaited. There, the sleep chambers were busy being loaded by my trained Trass Industries staff. A line of candidates extended down the ship's exit ramp and across the compound grounds. They appeared as exhausted as I was. The next candidate in line to be put under addressed me.
"Director."
She bowed her head deferentially. "Good to see you again." It took me a second for her name to come to me, but I remembered. "Ms. Stark." The staff slid her assigned chamber as far out as it could go. They stowed her bag below and began to hook her up to IV tubes and restraints. 2 years, and plenty of dreams later, she'd be woken within the orbit of Saturn. I received a similarly reverent nod from every candidate I passed. They probably didn't think I knew who they were since there were so many, but they were wrong. Every face had been ingrained on my mind. I nodded back to all of them until Kara and I emerged from the ship. My cheeks were instantly blasted by the cold Arizona night air and pricked by sand caught on a strong breeze. The spotlights of security drones filled the dark sky, aimed over the manned wall surrounding my compound at an unruly crowd of thousands. I stopped and looked up. The moon glowed in the night sky as it always did, but off to its side was an orange-hued glob, larger than all the stars around it. The asteroid had only recently become easy to spot, but now it was impossible to miss, an eye of condemnation staring down upon all of us.
"This way, Director,"
Kara said, addressing me formally since we were in public. She tapped me on the arm and began to lead me at a brisk pace in the direction of the dormitory where my candidates were staying. It was the only building in the compound with lights still on. The line of candidates snaking down from the ship toward it offered me their regards. We passed the compound's only gate. A line of heavily armed soldiers stood in front of it. A rioting mob of angry citizens of Earth stood on the other side. The bobbing sea of heads extended as far as I could see, illuminated by car fires. They flung rocks, bottles, and whatever else they could at the gate. Warning shots resonated from manned watchtowers along the wall and from automated drones zipping over their heads, but the mob had a mind of its own. Their glowers turned on me as we passed, causing the crowd to swell against the bars of the gate.
"Coward! Taking your friends and running!"
someone shouted, as if I could be blamed for a stray asteroid. A rock pelted me in the shoulder. I stumbled and would have fallen if Kara hadn't caught my old body and yanked me into the dormitory's security post.
"Animals,"
she gasped.
"Don't they understand?"
I rubbed my arm and gave it a good stretch. "Would you?" I asked, groaning. Kara blinked and then signaled to two of the guards inside the room. They parted, revealing Frank Drayton. He was crouched down, arms wrapped around a tiny girl who couldn't be older than 4. She hid her face in his chest.
"One of the candidates, Director," Kara said.
"I know," I replied. She tossed a medium-sized duffel bag at my feet. The zipper was ripped open.
"He snuck out of the compound last night somehow," she said. "When he attempted to get back in, security found the girl stuffed inside of this. Someone out there tore it out of his hands and she fell out. Half of the mob is made up of candidates you didn't accept, so they know the rules. They nearly stoned him to death because of that, so I had him brought in for you to deal with."
I stared at Mr. Drayton. I remembered the look on his face when I told him he was coming to Titan. Presently, his body was quaking. Only it wasn't just out of fear. His face was bruised and his clothes were torn to reveal fresh cuts. Well, that explained the blood on Kara. I crouched in front of him. "Mr. Drayton," I said, "what's going on here?" He looked up at me, pupils dilated from shock.
You remember?
He asked, his voice so raspy it sounded as if he'd swallowed a mouthful of sand. Of course I do. I placed my hand on his shoulder. Mr. Drayton, who is she? I knew the answer, but I had to hear it to believe it. Every passenger was invited to bring one bag full of possessions to Titan, but I never expected anyone to smuggle a person.
She's...
Mr. Drayton swallowed so hard I could see the lump in his throat bob up and down.
She's my daughter.
The breath fled my lungs. I glanced between him and the child at least a dozen times. How? I questioned. I looked extensively into every candidate's background. There were no children. Mr. Drayton smirked until stretching the fresh cut on his lips made him wince.
I didn't mention I was as good with computers as I am with plants.
This is no time for jokes, Kara reprimanded.
Right after the words left her lips, an ear-splitting explosion rang out. I grabbed Kara and dropped to the ground. Mr. Drayton's daughter cried while he squeezed her and repeatedly promised her everything was going to be fine. Outside, the volume of the mob amplified, becoming so loud that Kara and I immediately scrambled to our feet so we could see what was happening. I'm not sure how, but one of the drones had been taken down and had crashed right outside of the gate. The force of the explosion busted one of the hinges enough for people to crawl through one at a time. Before the officers inside could reinforce it, one person from the mob squeezed through and sprinted toward the Titan Project.
No children! The incensed man shrieked. That's my spot!
He didn't make it far. A gunshot rang out from somewhere on the wall. This one wasn't a warning. A bullet tore into the back of the man's skull and he toppled forward in a heap of tangled limbs. Everybody went silent. The guard on the wall who had fired stood completely still, smoke rising from the end of his rifle's blistering muzzle. If Mr. Drayton, getting caught sneaking in a child, had roused the mob, this was sure to ignite them. I was no military commander, but I did the first thing that came to mind. I grabbed my head of security, who was positioned just inside the dormitory, monitoring the transition, and said, "Get everyone to the ship, now!"
"Director, it takes time to load them into the pods," he answered.
"Sort them on the ship! We need them alive!"
He nodded and began transmitting orders over his radio. Moments later, every candidate started rushing across the compound toward the ship. They were so terrified. Guards poured out of the watchtowers to reinforce their comrades by the damaged gate. There were no more gunshots, but rifle butts cracked bones as the mob stuck their flailing arms through the bars. I turned to Kara, Mr. Drayton, and his daughter, and shouted, "Let's go!" Kara didn't move at first. Her petrified gaze was fixed on the mob. I'd never seen her so rattled. I shook her by the shoulders to snap her out of it, and we took off. Mr. Drayton picked up his daughter and followed. We didn't make it far from the gate before a bottle shattered next to my feet. I hopped out of the way of the shards, but Kara tripped over the legs of the man who'd been shot. As she slid across the dirt, her hands dragged through the blood, leaking from a gash in the back of the corpse's head. Again she froze. The dead man's blank eyes stared.
"Come on, Kara!"
I yelled as I hoisted her back to her feet. We crossed the large expanse of dirt between the dormitory and the ship without suffering any more setbacks. I helped her onto the ship's entry ramp, and once we were at the top, I fell against the wall. My lungs were filled with dirt, and I couldn't stop coughing. Once I was able to catch my breath, I scanned my compound. A few hundred yards away, the guards at the gate were struggling. The mob had started to climb over the gate, and I knew with all of their weight pressed against the compromised area, it wouldn't last much longer.
"Recall the men!"
I shouted to my head of security, who was positioned by the bottom of the ramp. He nodded. I could no longer recognize any of the people I'd rejected in the mob. Everyone was covered in dirt and blood, and they were all so riled that they might as well have been foaming at the mouth. The officers received the order and immediately broke ranks to sprint to the ship. Most of them had fought in wars, but gunning down innocent people wasn't in the job description. When the gates failed, they'd have no other choice.
The last thing I wanted was my followers to be reduced to savages like the rest of the people on Earth.
Daddy, what's going on?
Mr. Drayton's daughter asked, her voice so frail I could barely hear her over the commotion. He didn't respond. He was busy staring at the chaotic scene below.
I didn't think I would cause this, he muttered. You didn't think? I said, my glare boring through him. 3,000 spots, Mr. Drayton. Life support doesn't allow for any more. Do you suppose that I only chose people with no connections for my health? A man is dead because you didn't listen. What does it matter? He snapped, startling me.
Tears streamed down his cheeks.
He would have been dead tomorrow. They're all going to be dead tomorrow. Nothing we do can stop that.
No. I caught a glimpse of the surging mob out of the corner of my eye. But we can keep our humanity. Mr. Drayton took a measured breath.
You built this whole thing to save our species, Director. Isn't that enough?
I did what I had to.
So did I.
He released his daughter and rose to his full height, no longer afraid. She wrapped her tiny arms around his leg and hid her face against him.
I wasn't going to let her go like that. Not while there was a chance.
He gestured into the ship's interior. And I know you wouldn't either. I pride myself on my quick mind, but for once I had no idea what to say. There was no denying Mr. Drayton was right. I looked inside and saw Kara, and I couldn't help but picture her as a nervous 10-year-old girl without a place to go. Just seeing the fresh scrapes on her legs made me uneasy.
Let my daughter take my place, Mr. Drayton implored. I know the risks of sending her this young, but it's got to be better than her staying here, right? She can learn from the other horticulturalists. She's smart. Smarter than I was at her age.
I remained silent. Beyond Kara, hundreds scurried about, preparing the sleep chambers, moving up and down the central lift. In spite of my stringent requirements, each of the people inside them was unique. Many of them could be considered true geniuses, while others were merely the hardest workers on my staff from a peaceful time. The only thing they all visibly had in common was that they were young. Young enough to flourish on our new world. Everyone but me. I looked in the opposite direction, over the shoulders of the security officers crowding the ramp. Each livid individual in the mob at the gate was someone I'd decided was less worthy of propagating our species. My criteria. My interviews. My decisions. I was to remember their faces forever so that nobody else had to. But years of focusing on work had led me to ignore the simple fact that I belonged with them. The scraping of metal over dirt made the hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. The gate wouldn't last much longer, and if the people on the other side reached the ship, we'd all be torn to pieces. Suddenly, I knew what I had to do. I had one last gift to give. Kara, I mouthed. I moved in front of her and gripped her gently by the arms to try and gain her attention. Kara, I need you to do something for me. Her teary gaze snapped toward me.
Anything, Dad. I mean, Director, she stuttered.
I need you to go to the command deck and prepare the ship for launch while I manage the situation out here. This vessel was built to withstand entry through the thick atmosphere of Titan, but I don't know how long we can endure the fury of humankind's will to survive.
It's your design. I'm not sure if I know the ignition sequence well enough without you.
I held her at arm's length. Like you said, you've been with me since the beginning. You know everything that I do. Just stay focused and ignore what's out there. I believe in you, Kara. Your people need you.
Okay,
she said. She gritted her teeth and nodded.
I can handle it.
I know you can. I smiled as I patted her on the shoulder and turned her around. My heart sank as I watched her run toward the lift. I wanted to holler, I'll see you soon, just so she'd glance back over her shoulder. But I couldn't get the words out. I didn't want to lie. Not to her. Mr. Drayton, I said, spinning around. My gaze darted between him and his daughter. Are you sure you want this? It's what— A thunderous crash cut him off. One half of the compound's gate slammed against the wall, and the mob started pouring through, tumbling over each other and screaming. The officers at the base of the ramp tightened their stance and readied their rifles. It's what any father would do, he finished. I think I understand. I leaned in close so that I could whisper in his ear. First, have your daughter loaded into the chamber meant for you. Then I need you to follow Kara. There's no time to get everybody hooked up. Tell the staff to have everyone get into their chambers themselves and worry about hooking up when the ship reaches space. Once everybody is safely restrained, initiate the launch. Kara will have it ready, but she'll be waiting for me. Don't. Mr. Drayton's eyelids went wide as he realized what I was planning. There has to be another way, he said. Another body on the ship means someone else must be left behind. It's as simple as that. Then let it be me. These people need you. I smirked. Not anymore. I'll be dead in a decade. One old man isn't going to make a difference on Titan. You have an entire lifetime to make it feel like home. I regarded his daughter and wondered what Kara might have looked like at her age. It starts with her. Director Trass, I don't— This is an order, Mr. Drayton! I cut him off. Now, there are two chambers in the command deck. You might have to force her into hers, but make sure she gets in. You tell her. The words got stuck in my throat. I could picture her beautiful smile. Tell her. She's the only Trass who matters now. He stood motionless. Thank you, he muttered, hardly able to get the words out. For everything. Our gazes met one last time. Thank me when you're there, I replied. He was the only chosen candidate willing to risk everything on a lie. It was because of that I knew he wouldn't fail me. He wrapped his arm around his daughter and turned to a member of my staff. Once he began communicating the orders I'd told him to, I hurried to my head of security at the ramp. Move everybody inside, I told him. Director Trass, what's going on? He questioned. He fired off a few rounds to slow the rapidly approaching mob, but they were getting bolder. In minutes, I knew the guards I hired for protection were going to have to do whatever it took to survive. I couldn't allow my candidate's final memory of Earth to be having to slaughter members of their own species. It's time, I said. Nobody gets in or out after me. I keyed the ramp controls and set it to start closing. Then I sprinted out across my compound before any of the officers could stop me. The head of security shouted something, but he wasn't foolish enough to follow.
That's him!
A member of the mob screamed. I lowered my head and made a break for the compound's office building. The throng abandoned the Titan project to chase after me, just like I knew they would, but the angle I'd taken allowed me to stay ahead of them. They shouted all manner of obscenities. Debris rained down around me. A quarter mile later, I busted through the doors of the lobby just before a slew of rocks peppered the glass. For once, there were no candidates at the front desk blocking the etching on it that read, Titan's cold embrace awaits us. I wasn't far enough ahead of the mob to take the elevator, so I entered the emergency stairwell. My legs felt like jelly by the time I reached the hallway 6 stories up. My office glowed at the other end of it like a beacon. Apparently I'd left my lights on. The rest of the floor was dark. I sprinted toward my office and locked the door as soon as I made it inside. A few seconds later, the mob was pounding on it. I wasn't worried. The door was installed by a company that I'd started from nothing, and our products always worked. It would hold long enough for Mr. Drayton to complete his task. You can't hide, someone hollered. I ignored him and strolled over to my desk to sit. My foot knocked over a bottle of whiskey underneath. Enough remained inside to fix a glass. I grabbed a tumbler off the windowsill and cleaned it with the bottom of my shirt. As I held it up to the moonlight to see if I had gotten out all of the smudges, I saw a series of bright lights along the bottom of the Titan project come on. A siren began blaring throughout the entire facility. I poured myself a drink and leaned back. The floor began to shake violently, causing the golden liquid to slosh over the rim of my glass. The shouting and banging at my door stopped. Seconds later, a blinding flash filled the sky, which was swiftly drowned out by smoke and dust. I could feel the heat radiating through the glass. The shaking grew so intense that my bones rattled, and then it was gone. The faint light grew steadily smaller, and even though I couldn't yet see the Titan project through the fog, I knew liftoff was a success. Kara and Mr. Drayton had done it. They, his daughter, and 2,997 others were going to live. Humanity's best hope. As the dust and smoke began to part, the moon was revealed. On one side of it, the flaming engines of the Titan project glimmered. On the other, the asteroid shone. I raised my glass to the instrument of Earth's destruction and took a sip. Night Shift by Steve Bollier. The worst part about space is that every shift feels like a night shift. I'd just dropped off my first fare of the day, a regular, good kid with a taste for some weird stuff, but hey, who am I to judge? I heard the door of my cab open and the swish of polyester on vinyl. The smell of cigarettes and cheap booze punched my nose like a right hook. Where can I take you? I asked, coughing into my fist. There weren't a whole lot of upstanding citizens calling me for a ride these days, but this guy looked extra shady. I could always tell when someone was really up to no good, and his next words proved my instincts right. Listen for me, he said too quickly for me to understand. Come again? His eyes shifted back and forth like he was strung out on something strong. Jeez, man, come on, he said. Don't make me say it again. I left the ship in park and stared at him through the rearview mirror. Fine, he blustered, jerking his jacket. Bliss for mine. I smirked, and I knew he saw me. He lowered his head. Bliss for mine. That told me vaguely what kind of business he was up to. Although the Pleasure Planet wasn't explicitly illegal, decent people turned their noses up at it. Luckily for my new friend in the back seat, I wasn't what anyone would call a decent person. Maybe in another life, back when I'd been enlisted in the Star System Elite Guard, the S-Seg, I was just a stupid kid. I didn't have a clue what life was actually about. Maybe I still don't. Crazy night planned? I asked, my attempt at customer banter. The cabbie manual claims it ups the chances for a decent tip. It's nothing like that, man, not what you think. Sure, sure. Listen, friend, there's a reason we're called confidential cabs. We don't care what you do, long as you pay up when the night is through. That was our unofficial motto, by the way. It was usually followed by a smirk or two in the break room between shifts. I said, it's not like that. I figured the man was entitled to his secrets and started the fare. I tapped the pedal and my ship lurched forward at full speed. Space debris zipped past, some burning up as it struck my windshield. What's your name? I asked. He huffed but kept his mouth shut. He pulled something from his